The date is July 1st, 1987, and we're watching Inner Space. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Jack Putter to my Lieutenant Tuck Pendleton.
Wow, that's a lot of syllables. Hello, everybody. It's Colin Stewart here for ya.
But at least they're all P's and T's. I'm okay with P's and T's. I mean, you know, for the last few weeks, you've been throwing a lot of S's into this show and been struggling. So, but
the bane of my existence.
Yeah, Jack Putter, I can handle that one, yeah. So this week, we are closing out Meguiary. Oh, boy. And we're looking back at Canada Day, 1987, when the movies and theaters were Full Metal Jacket, The Living Daylights, more James Bond for you, Spaceballs, the subject of episode 125, Predator, and of course, our movie for today, Inner Space, which earned $25.89 million on a $27 million budget. So close. So very, very close.
But too far.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I say so close like I've got $1 million just sitting around in Bitcoin or some shit, you know, like.
Well, of course, as always, there will be spoilers ahead. So if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please. No, I was going to say miniaturize your expectations. please. Pause. Go watch the movie and then come back and hear what we have to say.
When in doubt, just go with Old Faithful. Well, I found six taglines this week, Colin.
Six. Wow.
Yeah.
A movie I had never even heard of to this day has six taglines.
Yep. Yeah. a movie that has Steven Spielberg's name above the title has six taglines, and you've never heard of it. Well, first, take a trip you'll never forget.
Sounds like a tagline to, like, a vacation movie.
Yep. Well, no, number two sounds more like the tagline to a vacation movie. Number two is, this summer, take a trip you'll never forget.
Okay.
Number three, an adventure of incredible proportions. I like it. It's not too bad. It's all right. I mean,
Something's rubbing me the wrong way about it. I don't know.
We're still getting better, though. We're getting better. Well, number four, in 24 hours, he will experience an amazing adventure and become twice the man.
Like, these last two taglines make me feel like the people who wrote them didn't watch the movie. Like, they're making it sound like he's growing, like, big. Like, it's a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids scenario.
Well, but, I mean, the incredible proportions, I mean, you've got a tiny guy inside a human body, right? But
I guess.
This one, see, I think it's the pun. I think there's wordplay going on with become twice the man with, there's someone inside him. I see what you're going. He's now two people.
Yes.
Well, number five, a huge dose of comedy in one big gulp. It would have been better if Big Gulp had actually been a sponsor. I mean, you know, like, inject a huge dose of comedy in your ass, but like, that would have been more appropriate. But yeah, I just, in one big gulp, it's like, I like it if he had drank him.
Yeah.
Well, finally, number six, this one is my favorite. I think you're gonna like this one. Inside Jack Putter, there's a hero trying to get out.
Yeah, that one works. That one works.
Come on. Yeah, there it is, right? But still, doesn't say much about this movie. Like you said, it sounds like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. So let's go to Colin and get a 60-second synopsis.
I'm honestly surprised they didn't do, like, the bite-sized fun or the pint-sized fun or, like, anything that you would expect from, like, nowadays an Ant-Man movie of some sort.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Anywho, in San Francisco, down on his luck, U.S. Navy aviator Lieutenant Tuck Pendleton volunteers for a secret miniaturization experiment where he is placed in a submersible pod, shrunk to microscopic size, in order to be transferred into a syringe that will then be injected into a rabbit. Sounds simple enough.
Very.
During the experiment, the lab is attacked by a rival organization led by scientist Dr. Margaret Kanker, who plans to seize the experiment and steal the miniaturization technology. One of the scientists escapes with the syringe and manages to inject Tuck in the pod into an unsuspecting passerby, hypochondriac Jack Putter, before being killed. On regaining consciousness, Tuck is unaware of what has happened and believes he has been injected into the rabbit, but soon realizes he is inside a human. He makes contact with Jack and explains that the pod has only a few hours' supply of oxygen and needs his help in order to extract him by going back to the lab. The lab, the scientists explain to Tuck and Jack that the other group stole one of the two computer chips that are vital to the process. Their mastermind is Victor Scrimshaw. His henchmen include Tinker, Igo, and Cowboy. Jack contacts Tuck's estranged girlfriend, Lydia Maxwell. They learn that the cowboy plans to buy the computer chip from Scrimshaw and hatch a plan to subdue and impersonate the cowboy in order to get the chip from Scrimshaw. But Jack has a panic attack that sends the whole thing south. While in prison, Jack and Lydia share a kiss, which unknown to them transfers Tuck into Lydia's body through their spit. The criminals drink Igo and inject him into Jack to locate Tuck, kill him, and obtain the other chip that is attached to the pod. Jack and Lydia manage to escape, steal back the chip, and order everyone in the laboratory at gunpoint into the miniaturization device, but they don't know how to operate it, and so they just manage to shrink everyone to half their original size. Tuck, now inside Lydia, finds a growing baby. This is a big question. I have a big question about this. Tuck, now inside Lydia, finds a growing baby and realizes that she is pregnant with his child. Jack and Lydia kiss again to transfer him back. They frantically drive back to the lab in order to enlarge him, not realizing that the shrunken Scrimshaw and Kanker are hiding in the back seat. While they attempt to subdue Jack and Lydia, Igo locates Tuck in Jack's esophagus and attacks him. Tuck disables Igo's craft, and the latter is killed when Tuck drops it into Jack's stomach acid. With only minutes of oxygen left in the pod, Jack follows Tuck's instructions to eject it from his lungs by making himself sneeze. Tuck and the pod are successfully enlarged, and he is reunited with Lydia and finally gets to meet the Jack in person. And if the movie couldn't just end there, in my opinion, Tuck and Lydia get married, and Tuck has the secret chips for some reason as his cufflinks, and then the cowboy shows up and commandeers their limousine. Jack, you know, grows a pair, quits his shrink, rejects some girl, quits his job, and races off to save Tuck and Lydia from the cowboy. There you go.
You need to set up the sequel that doesn't end up happening when you're $1 million short of breaking even.
Yeah, I can honestly say I don't think I've ever seen a movie that ends like that. Yeah. Except for like James Bond. Casino Royale kind of ends like that, but like yeah, it really like leaves a lot of questions like
he's a hero now.
What do we think happened when Jack like caught up to them?
yeah. Who knows? Oh boy. Well, inner space. So this is one of those ones that it's like batteries not included. You know, just one of those just movies that for some reason has just stuck with me for years. And when I was younger, I mean, it's not necessarily appropriate for me. I mean, it's not terribly inappropriate. It's probably too old for me, but I was probably watching this on Super Channel back in 1988. I mean, it was a movie that I loved when I was younger and just haven't seen for years. And so I was so excited to revisit this. And I thought, you know, I want to throw a out of the box Meg Ryan movie at you for Maguire. So, Colin, you had never seen this movie or heard of it?
Yeah, not only had I never seen it, I'd never heard of it.
Okay.
So, I have zero experience with this movie. Although, okay. I will say that after seeing the box office and watching the movie, I am kind of shocked that it did as bad as it did, just because it's like, I can't think of a lot that, like, in terms of like tone and performances and even story that like separates this movie from a lot of the other movies of that time. Like, it's not that dissimilar from like the Goonies or Gremlins or like Short
Not really.
Circuit or Batteries Not Included.
Yeah.
Like, it could easily like I wonder like what about this movie people back then didn't like jive with, or maybe there was just too many things, or
Yeah, or
maybe it
just
came out on a bad weekend or something. I don't know.
terrible marketing campaign or something. Yeah, I mean, that you'd think that would be a good weekend, 'cause that's like 4th of July weekend for the Americans, you know, Canada Day weekend for us. I mean, it should have had a shot.
Well, the other thing is like we'll get to it later, but this movie has like the weird it's very rare that on Rotten Tomatoes like a movie has such a high critic score and such a mediocre audience score.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I mean, I'm even looking back at what the other movies in theaters were that I mentioned, and I don't think there's anything out there that's just like should absolutely blow this out of the water compared to, you know, like Predator, Spaceballs, James Bond, not even one of the better ones, and Full Metal Jacket. I mean, it's okay. If I had seen a 1987 banger in there, I would have probably mentioned it. So, I don't know. Who knows what was missing on this one? But let's jump into Inner Space, directed by Joe Dante, who, once again, I mean, Gremlins, Small Soldiers, Explorers. We've seen him a few times. You can definitely see the Explorers influence on this movie. Yeah, the ship is basically the exact same thing, isn't it?
I didn't think about it till just now, but yeah, it was pretty
Their
similar.
converted tilt-a-whirl looks exactly the same to me. Well, originally John Carpenter was, or I guess they wanted John Carpenter originally for this project. That could have been a lot creepier. Produced by Michael Fennell and, of course, Frank Marshall and Kathleen Kennedy and Spielberg get the executive producer credit on that, and written by Jeffrey Boehm, who we talked about with Lethal Weapon and Lost Boys, and Chip Prosser, or Proser, maybe Proser. So this is the set that Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid met on. We've been talking about it all month. I keep mentioning things about Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan, and so this is the set that they met on. So all of the movies that we've watched, they were actually together for and married for most of it, until Meg Ryan cheated on him in 2001. So America's
No.
sweetheart, what are you doing?
Did she cheat on him with?
That I'm not sure of. Yeah, but they were married from 91 till 2001, but they started dating following this movie.
What
So
movies did she do in 1991? Nick Cage.
no, 98 was City of
Oh,
Angels.
dang.
93 was Sleepless in Seattle.
Uh-oh.
99 was Tom Hanks in You've Got Mail, I think. Let's see, we got Kaden Leopold. I think that's like 2003. I think that's after they would have broken up. So it wasn't Jackman. Might have been a director.
Wait, you said
But
1990?
they were married from 91 to
Oh,
2001. They
2000.
broke
Oh,
up in 2001. Yeah.
okay. I got it. Well, Nick Cage
Yes.
still on
Yeah,
the
true. He's in the running.
Dennis Quaid's Wikipedia is conflicting the Inner Space Wikipedia because it says that Quaid and Ryan fell in love during the shooting of their second film together, DOA.
DOA. And what year was that one? Was that 88? Yeah. So I guess they met in this one, started dating on. So I don't know. I mean, this movie precedes it, and I noticed that they were in a few scenes together. So they probably did meet on the set of this one. I have to refute what that one says. There is another fact that I discovered with this movie is that apparently Thelma and Louise for years has been credited as the first movie to show someone doing a selfie on screen. And that was in 1991, and it's like, nah,
Man.
no Thelma and Louise. Dennis Quaid does it in this movie.
Yeah, he does.
Snaps that old Polaroid selfie on his way into the capsule. Yeah. Well, let's talk about this cast, because, I mean, we've already started talking about the leads.
All right. Dennis Quaid is Lieutenant Pendleton. Martin Short is Jack Putter.
So, originally, they wanted Arnold Schwarzenegger as Tuck and Michael J. Fox as Jack. That was what the original casting, what they want. That was the dream casting for Innerspace.
I feel like if they had held on to this script for a little longer, it could have been the third in the Schwarzenegger DeVito trilogy, like, series.
Oh, that's true. But see, Arnold didn't want to do it because he was trying to branch into comedy, and he thought that this was still action comedy. Because Tuck is the action hero part, right? So
that's funny. I would say this movie is, like, I would only refer to this movie as comedy.
Yeah,
I don't know that I would
maybe
call it that.
Sci-fi,
yeah, like,
but
yeah, like science fiction comedy, maybe. I don't know that I would.
Yeah,
I guess there's some action, but it's not like an Arnie action.
No, it's on a very, very, very small scale. Warren Beatty and Ted Danson were possible Tuck castings, and Mel Gibson, Robin Williams, Rick Moranis, and Woody Allen were possible Jack alternate castings.
Oh my God.
Mel Gibson,
Woody Allen.
A very wide spectrum. I mean, at least Woody Allen, even though he's got the whole neurotic energy, he's got a little bit more of that Martin Short flavor. Mel Gibson is does,
yeah,
not.
I couldn't imagine Mel Gibson. We wanted Mel Gibson as Jack.
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's doesn't make sense unless I wrote it down in the wrong spot in my notes. But
well, I think, like, what if to say this movie was meant to be an action movie, to me it could become an action movie if you had, like, the nerd scientist in the pod and the, like, fit guy out. Then it could
true.
Be an action movie.
True. I mean, the one doctor does some pretty mad parkour at one point, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we got Meg Ryan as Lydia Maxwell.
And alternate castings were every woman in Hollywood.
Yeah, unfortunately, this is a pretty, like, cliche female role.
bit of a throwaway female in this movie, you betcha.
Kevin McCarthy is Victor Scrimshaw.
Who we saw in UHF. Way back in episode 4.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's far too long ago for me to remember.
But that's his thing is, you know, evil, maniacal, bad guy, old guy. Yeah.
Fiona Lewis is Dr. Margaret Kanker.
Yeah.
Henry Gibson is Mr. Wormwood. John Hora is Dr. Ozzie Wexler. Robert Picardo is the cowboy. Do I know that name?
Yeah, he was one of the voices in Pagemaster. Okay. I think he was in Buckaroo Banzai. He's a Star Trek guy too. He's the doctor on Voyager.
Okay.
Yeah, he's around. He's usually bald. You know, he's got the crown bald is usually what he's got going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wendy Shaw was Wendy.
Yeah, we saw her in Small Soldiers most recently, and Batteries Not Included. I was trying to remember who she was in Batteries Not Included. I have no idea.
William Shallert is Dr. Greenbush. Harold Sylvester is Pete Blanchard. Mark Taylor is Dr. Niles. He was in a bunch of movies we watched, too. Vernon Wells is Mr. Igo.
Yeah, he was in one I watched with Aaron over the summer. He was in Weird Science. Yeah.
And then I'm reading that Joe Dante had an uncredited cameo as a Vector Scope employee.
Yeah. Yeah, and I liked shouting out Dick Miller. He has his little cab driver moment because he showed up in Gremlins and Explorers and Small Soldiers. And then, of course, the two patients in the waiting room are Joe Flaherty and Andrea Martin from SCTV. So Martin Short had a couple of his old buddies in that scene, so. And nice. Animator Chuck Jones, famous for, you know, Bugs Bunny, is a grocery store customer.
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are my extra shout-outs. So we open this movie up on, like, you know, the weird ethereal music, super close-up of a crystal environment, and it pulls out during the credits until we see that it's ice in a glass. And we cut to our hero, Tuck Pendleton, who's being poured a glass of whiskey or bourbon, or what do real men drink? I don't know. I'm Scotch. Not a drinker. Scotch. Yeah. And we've got a bunch of patriotic soldiers stuff going on. Some big event is happening, but he is drunk. Okay, I guess I just have to ask it. You kind of implied that, was it just the extra ending that was too much for you? Or I get the vibe from you that you weren't feeling this movie.
Like, I don't know. It's not terrible. It's not like, I wasn't like, I will say, like, I don't know how to say it. I'm not a big, like, I wasn't like spot into Dennis Quaid.
Okay.
It was tough for me to care about him or like about a lot of this movie. Just like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's one of those movies where I wouldn't say I like hated it, but I was just kind of like, I don't really have like a lot of strong feelings about it either way.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought that, like, and I mean, I can't even remember like the last time I've seen Dennis Quaid in a movie.
Dragonheart,
right? Yeah. But he just kind of seems like just generic. That's how I would describe him. Like, he's just like not interesting to me.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I felt about him.
I can see that. There are different moments when I can look at Dennis Quaid and see other actors in his face. Like, it's, he is one of these guys that just looks like every other actor in Hollywood. Like, somehow, yeah, from every angle, he just looks like someone different. And so you're right. Yeah. He is just like kind of the king of generic.
Yeah, like when he was drunk, he was giving me like very young, like Jack Nicholson vibes. Yeah. Like he had this like
which gives you Christian Slater vibes.
Yeah, the way he smiled, I was almost like, man, you should be the Joker in something, or I don't know, but like, mm-hmm, I don't know what it is about him. I was just kind of like, maybe he's also just like this era of actor is, I don't know, the only one who's like kind of close to it now is like Robert Downey Jr., but he doesn't have the charisma of Robert Downey Jr.
Okay. Well, I mean, I think Dennis Quaid has also kind of made a lot of his stuff as being he's rugged. I think he's got a rugged quality, but he's still kind of a pretty boy at the same time. I don't know. Well, okay, so we also find out that he's a big old misogynist, right? I don't know how that managed to work to bed our heroine for the month. I don't know how he managed to pull off his moves when he was pissed drunk like that, taking her home.
Yeah, this is what I was confused about, because is this meant to be the night that she gets impregnated?
I think so, yeah.
Because the way that scene plays out, I kind of just assumed that they didn't have sex. He just seems so wasted.
Yeah. Or you were just like, how good was Martin Short's kiss?
Yeah.
How long has he been without a girlfriend? Jeez.
Transferred
a whole baby. Yeah, no, that's, yeah, I'm left to assume that that was the night that it happened, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, when I was watching that as a kid, I didn't necessarily get how it all worked out either, but, you know.
Yeah. There are parts of this movie, like, I remember when I was in high school, I think, for, like, biology, we had, like, a teacher who liked to play movies, and she let us watch Osmosis Jones. Nice. Because it, like, teaches you about the inner workings of the body. And there are parts of this movie where I was, like, specifically when he's like going towards the heart valve and stuff, where I was like, oh, this might be a good educational movie for some teachers. I can't remember if there's, I mean, you do get some buns and
yeah, you do get a butt. Yeah.
There's probably some swears, but
one or two, I'm sure. Yeah. But I don't think this is anything more than a PG-13.
Yeah. Yeah. I was struck by Dennis Quaid's physique. in this movie because it's so like, it's just so like not what you see in a male physique in movies these days. Like he pretty much only has abs. He has like the thickest abs I've ever seen in my life, but then like no biceps, no deltoids, no back, no legs.
Yeah. Well, see, I mean, I thought he had a little bit more going on than that. I was kind of impressed with what he was doing. But yes, you're right. The abs, though, really dominate what's going on.
His thick corded abdominals.
Yeah.
Maybe I was just too taken aback by them to notice anything else.
That's
They all paled
right.
in comparison.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then the ass shot. I mean, it's like, look at that white ass as she drives away with his sheet in the door. I'm trying to think because see, after that point, it's 2 months later, so I guess that would have been a 2 month fetus in there. Yeah.
I mean, it looked a little big to me, but it's movie magic.
How much of a relationship did they have before that night? I mean, I don't think this is the first time he bed her, right? Like, I believe they were a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of got the sense that they were like broken up before the party, though.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just making that up. Like, it seemed like she was more like taking care of it because she was like the only one there to kind of do it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so maybe a recent breakup. I don't know. They could have gotten dirty a week or two earlier, you know, for that to still make sense. And I don't know. No, it's the magic baby. That was the night that everything changed. That was the moment in that's what is it that they call it in like Loki? That's one of the permanent time
Oh yeah, a fixed
moments, a
point.
fixed point in time. That's right. Yeah. Okay, so now we get 2 months later, he is doing this secret experiment. You know, he walks out there like a rock star, starts kissing ladies. I mean, you know, look at him go. I mean, he's got so much swagger that you can't get away with anywhere outside of 1987. And they put him in this pod. Why doesn't he have like any major restraints or harnesses? This procedure involves centrifuge action, and he doesn't even have like a head restraint. They give him goggles, so his eyes don't pop out, I guess, but they don't even like brace his head. He's like off to the side with his head all tilted while he's being spun around super fast. And then I don't understand how they managed to catch it and get it into the syringe. Somehow this machine shrinks it down and puts it into fluid and fills a syringe. I don't understand. Do they have a vacuum? You know, is there a suction tube coming out of the wall at the other end?
Like you, there's no like they don't like explain their scientific method. Like you'd
Yeah.
think like maybe it would be in some kind of like it'd be spinning and then it'd be in like a funnel, and
Yeah.
then all of a sudden it would just like kind of like everything would just funnel down into this thing. They'd catch it in like a tube and then hook it up to a syringe.
Yeah, but that's not how it looks like this thing is built, but maybe it is, but they don't want to show that. I will say that I found the special effects surprisingly good
Yeah.
throughout this movie. You're not gonna win any Oscars in today's climate with those special effects, but I thought they were pretty good. But I guess that's how you do it, is you don't try to do complicated ones like showing it flushing into a drain.
Yeah. I mean, there is something to like it goes to show like how like critical people are now because it's like even the most impossible thing you see in a movie, it's like at the end of the day, you ha the audience needs to believe it could be possible.
Yeah. Ugh,
Whereas, like,
looks fake.
yeah, whereas like in these movies, it's just like, well, the story calls for the guy to shrink down, so like he goes in a shrink machine, and like it doesn't need
There
to
you
make
go.
any sense. We're all just on board with the idea that it's impossible.
Well, yeah, because when you do see like the real science in this, which is supposed to be the most high tech of anything, it's terrible. Right? Like, and I mean, one thing I'm specifically talking about, well, I'll tell you about it in Sponsorship Corner. because I thought this would be a fun way to bring it into Sponsorship Corner. Always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, Innerspace is brought to you by the Unimate Puma 200 robotic arm. That's the arm that I really like, because I like the sight gag at the end when they get frustrated with the robotic arm being so slow and just pick up the chip and put it in themselves. Yeah. Lucerne Milk, Quaker Oats, Fancy Feast Cat Food, Cap'n Crunch Cereal and Life Cereal, Nike Shoes, the San Francisco Herald, National Enquirer, National Geographic, Sports Illustrated, and TV Guide magazines, Bugs Bunny, Coors and Bud Light Beers, Southern Comfort, Tic Tacs, Pepsi Cola, Panasonic Electronics, Stetson Cowboy Hats, Ford, Jeep, Chrysler, and Volvo Vehicles, Targus Sunglasses, the Santa Clara Fashion Square, Bullock's Department Store, Wisefield's Jewelers, Loco Shirts, and Cook Travel, plus the possibly fictional Berman's Provisions Company, Radish King Radishes, McBurn Quality Meats, Apollo Lasers, and Club Inferno. And of course, brought to you by Safeway Grocery Stores. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. I couldn't help but think of Frank the whole way through this movie.
I feel like Frank would love this movie.
Yeah. And he'd feel seen, because he's like, hey.
Another grocery store worker, just like
me. I'm an assistant manager at Safeway. He works at a Safeway. So he is Jack Putter. This could be him with someone floating around inside him.
I don't think I would ever suggest my wife watch this movie, because she has like a little bit of OCD. And I feel like one of her like number one fears is, that she's just going to like get stabbed by an errant needle. And so feel like for anybody watching this movie who might have that same fear, like to know that, oh yeah, they'd be like, oh, look, it can happen.
It's so unsanitary. I mean, that needle has just been bouncing around in his dirty pocket. I mean, at least we know that did come from a lab. But yes, any needle, you never know. That's one of those things. The world's a scary place.
Yeah.
That's why you got to know parkour, like Ozzy, the scientist, you know. His move when he goes run, he's getting chased by the car, and he goes over the fence, hangs over the fence, the car stops, and he comes back over the fence and then goes like up the embankment over another fence. Like, it's like, who's this guy? Why are you working in a lab?
Ozzy should have just injected Jack into him, into himself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, and he was terrible at hiding everything. Like, they break in. First of all, I want to know what's on that card that they put in the card reader. They peel something off that card and it starts smoking, and then they stick it in and the card reader shorts out. That's how they break into the lab. What the fuck was in there? What, like, did they peel back? Like, was it like a little tray of acid?
Old school James Bond villain style.
Yeah. It's like, whatever. It's smoking. We put it in there. Sparks fly. Don't ask questions. But, I mean, then we get in there, and it's super shocking that the bad guy, well, it's not a guy at all. That bad guy's a lady. Oh, no. But when she finds the doctor, he looks like, very deliberately over at the syringe and then back at her and then lunges for the syringe. It's like, gee, I wonder where the thing you're trying to hide from us is. He's not very good at being discreet. He should have like wandered over there. Oh, hey, weird. What are you doing here? You know, pick it up behind his back. No chill, Doc. No chill. What are you doing, Ozzy?
This movie kind of in that way, like reminds me of Threat Level Midnight.
Yeah.
Where it's just like everybody makes like it's all the acting is kind of like overstated, and it's all to like handhold the audience through the plot.
Yeah. Yeah. I did find it was worst with him, but yeah, there is definitely the main bad guy, Iago or whatever his name is.
Iago.
Whatever that Yeah, whatever that brand of yogurt is. He's he's got his fake hand with the gun attachment. I wonder what his gun budget is, his gun hand bat budget. Because he gets one shot out of each hand.
It's not like, oh yeah, because he pulls the hand off.
And puts on a different gun hand.
Isn't there like a He-Man? Isn't there a He-Man villain like that? Or...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Is it Trapjaw or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, Trapjaw.
Oh, boy.
Maybe that's why this movie didn't do good, because, like, the more you watch it, the more you're like, man, they just ripped off, like, all these random things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Ozzy, I mean, he gets into this big bike car chase, right? I mean, like, that, it's totally a James Bond chase that he gets. I mean, he gets the bike and he's being chased by the car and he swerves and avoids it and he gets hit by another car and he runs into the mall and all of that. And then, yeah, and then you get the James Bond villain coming out with his gun hand and menacingly blowing the smoke off of the chamber in front of the little kid that's standing looking at him.
And you also have a villain called the Cowboy.
Yeah. Yeah, the Cowboy is pretty awesome. I like the Cowboy. He just don't give a fuck about anything. He's lighting up cigars on the plane. On the most wide-aisled plane I've ever seen. Come on. That's the least realistic thing in this movie.
Somebody should fire that set designer.
That's right. Go back in time. How is this not a time machine too? There's one line that I love. They're in the scene where, for some reason, Jack's premonition dream is coming true. The dream that he told his doctor about. All of a sudden, you know, he's got someone inside him who has set off an electromagnetic pulse, and his cash register is going haywire. And uh-oh, who's here? But it's Mrs. Garrett from The Facts of Life. It's the redheaded woman. It's the lady that he's been dreaming about for some reason. At the end of it, where he asks for the aspirin and she goes, well, I'm not buying that aspirin now. The guy in line behind her goes, at $800 a bottle, who would? Favorite line of the movie. Nice. Right there. Yeah.
Is that one of the SCTV people?
No. No, it's not. No. No, they're the patients in the office. Right. Like when he's waiting for the doctor, yeah, once he's starting to get his eye pains and everything like that. Are you a Martin Short fan?
I mean, I did like him in this movie a lot. I can't say that I've seen him in a lot of things. Okay. I really only know him from like Conan O'Brien interviews. I don't know that I've actually seen a lot of his work other than the Santa Claus 3.
Okay. Okay, I'm just wondering, because it's like, when he starts dancing, because he has, you know, the drink with Tuck, you know, it's a very Ed Grimley-style dance, but it's one of these things that the more Martin Short things you watch, the more you kind of see, it's like, well, okay, he definitely has his go-to moves that he does in everything.
Yeah, just...
But yeah, I mean, he's very, like, he's definitely the Jim Carrey of 1987. Like, you can definitely see that it's like, okay, yeah. He's the physical comedian before the physical comedians that you know better, like Jim Carrey or Melissa McCarthy.
Jim Carrey or Robin Williams.
Chris Farley. Yeah, Robin Williams, yeah.
Who's, like, the physical comedian of our time?
Like, right now?
Yeah.
I think that's Melissa McCarthy.
Melissa McCarthy, right? How the mighty have fallen.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I don't know. I was just looking up Martin Short's... he's in Aquaman in the Lost Kingdom? Good Lord.
Is he just a voice of something?
Yeah, he's... the voice of a fish, it looks like. Yeah, actually, I actually haven't seen, like, I think the only things I've seen of him are things that I've watched for this show, and that's Three Amigos, Interspace okay. Now, and then the Santa Claus 3.
That's funny.
But yeah, I mostly know him from Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, because he all like
Yeah.
whenever he gets interviewed, I find him like he's one of those guys who's good at being mean in a funny way.
Yeah. Yeah. And always a lot of energy. Yeah.
I think I used to get Martin Short mixed up with Gilbert Gottfried a lot.
Oh, okay. No, yeah, not the parrot from Aladdin.
No.
Yeah, that's Gilbert Godfrey. Yeah. The squinty eyes. Yeah.
Yeah.
There is this quick scene where we go back to see the bad guys, the evil doctor lady, and they're looking at photos of Jack. Someone has gotten pictures of Jack from the mall. Why are they blown up so large? Like they're not 8x10s. They're like 24x30s. Like they're massive. She's got these massive pictures, and in each picture it's like blown up. It's like you get a far away shot of him, and then you get a picture close up where you can see his name tag, and then you get a close up of the name tag. But every one of these pictures is photo size, or like giant size. Like, does she have poor vision or something? Like,
I just wanted to
what
make
was
sure
the
that it was a very clear resolution.
okay,
Maybe they
yeah.
just needed the size to fit the resolution of the photos.
I'm just yeah. I mean, I'm just wondering what the props department screwed up. Like, oh
Yeah, like
shit.
as we're talking about it, I'm thinking like I need to rewatch this movie similarly to like how you need to rewatch Batman and Robin with like Batman 66 in mind. It's like I need to rewatch this movie as if I'm watching like some, I don't know, like really campy spy thing, like Get Smart or something like that.
Well, yeah, because we got this whole little secret mission going on to this whole espionage mission. The bad guys trying to steal the microchips that you don't make more than one of.
Yeah, that whole chip thing as well to me, like, I don't get it. They're not
Yeah.
even chips. They look like sprockets of some sort. Like, they look like gears.
It's the MacGuffin for this movie. You know, it's the flux capacitor. It's the magic technology that makes this weird centrifugal
Yeah.
technology, shrinking technology work. It's the baseball in the shrinking ray. That's all it is. So, who knows? They're in Silicon Valley. Who knows what they're inventing down there these days in 1987. So I think it's irresponsible though to only make the one set that you need. But what I find even more irresponsible is after you've been drinking to use slapping yourself in the face as a sobering up technique. Can you drive? I don't know. Slap yourself in the face. Like,
All good.
all good. You know, his first comment about take my car, get out of here is quickly followed up by, hey, you've been drinking. You know, let's get into my car and drive some more.
Yeah.
No longer cares about his classic, does he?
I kind of thought this movie was gonna end up being, I mean, it kind of does. I thought it was gonna end up being where like what like what where Jack like becomes Tuck a little more, like
Yeah.
where maybe it's like they learn from each other. Like maybe we're gonna get the moment before where they're just trying to figure things out, and maybe they don't realize the oxygen situation, where it's like where Jack's actually gonna try to like help Tuck become more of a confident ladies man type guy. And then maybe through
You mean Tuck to help
Tuck to
Jack?
help Jack. Sorry, I missed their names.
Yeah.
Because one of my other
I
pro
know they're so similar.
one of my other problems with this movie is I don't understand how Tuck, he doesn't really go through like the character transformation. Like
Yeah.
he's not that he doesn't end up like he doesn't really learn anything from Jack, it doesn't seem like. It's almost like
No.
he just discovers he has a baby on the way, and
Yeah, that's all he learns, yeah.
then maybe decides like, oh, I need to be responsible. But I don't know.
Yeah, no, he doesn't really seem to learn his lesson. I mean, like you said, Jack in the end does grow a pair, and it does even happen before the moment in the limo where he chases after the limo. There is the moment on the stairs where he's like, you know, Tuck, give me strength, and ends up kicking the guy down the stairs, and then finds out that, oh wait, Tuck's actually inside Lydia.
Yeah.
So I did that all on my own, but he does gain confidence and grow a backbone. There is that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a good character growth, but you're right, Tuck, not so much. Not as much, yeah. I mean, and of course, the only girl that he has the confidence to do anything with is Jax.
Tuck's girl.
Or Tuck's girl. Tuck's girl. See, I do the same thing, yeah. Yeah. Good plan, man. Good plan. Just go after that guy's girl. You got all this confidence, and that's the one you choose?
I kind of zoned out a little bit this far. Did they explain the science of, like, how he's able to, like, change his face?
Not really.
Okay.
Like, it's things like he's stimulating nerves and things like that. Like, he's stimulating musculature. I don't know. Yeah. Science!
All right.
Yeah. I mean, he does say it's going to hurt a lot, and it does look painful.
Yeah.
They did a lot of that with animatronics, though.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I thought that was interesting. I thought it was just sped up film of them shaking their heads, but... Okay, so after the introduction of the cowboy, Tuck has managed to convince Jack to go find Lydia because they've broken out of... That's the thing. Is Tuck has convinced this guy to grab a gun from the guy that was in his apartment. This guy has convinced Jack to break out of the lab. I guess it's not really a breakout, but he does take Tuck's car. But then they go after Lydia. Now, when he honks the horn, yes, it's a very distinct horn sound, but why is Lydia the only person on the street that turns? That bugs me. Joe Dante, if you're listening, you should get more of your extras to react to things. Because, you know, I'd turn if I heard a horn. Doesn't matter whether I recognize the distinct sound of the horn or not. I'm going to turn.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever, like, I was thinking about this. Like, anytime I'm in my car, there's something about hearing a horn when you're in your car, but I feel like even when you're walking... You think it's for you, yeah. No matter. Yeah, like, you're it's always for, like, yeah. Oh, you always have to look to just make sure it's not for you.
Yeah, and I mean, especially with my job where I have to get out of a vehicle to walk to a washroom, you know, I'm so used to answering to "Hey" or "Excuse me, hello" or "Sir," you know, or you know, so it's just I'm so used to hearing people call for me that I look at almost every noise. My head's always on a swivel. Can't trust anyone in this world.
Yeah, I don't know what it says about me, but I'm like notorious. I always end up in those like shitty situations where you see somebody like down the sidewalk and they're like waving, and I'm always like, oh, and then I'm like,
hi,
and then I have, the awkward like half like trying to figure out how do I know this person, and
yeah,
then...
or. Yeah, and then you run your hand through your hair because you don't actually know that. Yeah, Oh, my shoulder. Oh, jeez. So this is something I think about when it comes to a TV show like Big Brother, is how long does it take for you to forget that the cameras are there when it comes to like your everyday normal habits, you know, like. You know, how long does it take you to forget that, oh, shit, I shouldn't be picking my nose right now or something like that, you know? Because I think the same thing in this movie when you know that he can see out your eye. And yet when you go to the bathroom and you're having the discussion with your wiener, you know, or at least to the guy that comes into the bathroom, it looks like you're having a discussion with your wiener. Why are you looking at it the whole time? I mean, imagine Tuck's view, man. Like, I would have liked the line from Tuck where it's like, hey, would you stop looking at your dick, man? Like, can we look at the wall or something? Jeez. But, I mean, the comedy is in the, no, it's okay. You won't be small forever.
Yeah, dick jokes for the win.
Dick jokes for the win. Yeah. So yeah, and then again we get to see that Jack is, you know, he ends up getting abducted and thrown in the freezer truck, and we get the ultimate bad guy, the guy from UHF, the comes in with his fur coat and he's talking. I guess for that scene, the speech that he's giving Jack, they had to write something at the last minute because they're like, oh shit, we didn't write him a speech, right? And so, like, that's why most of it is just Tuck talking in his ear about convincing him to jump out the back door, because it's like, it's just gibberish. But I mean, who, that's just sloppy truck driving. You didn't seal the back of the truck. God, man.
This whole bat evil organization operation is, you know, they got some cool fancy gadgets, but they don't seem like they're really, you know, top of the line in terms of their planning and implementation.
No, it seems like only the one person, only the doctor chick seems competent out of all of them. Yeah. Like, even the main bad guy is a bit of a dope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Tuck, once again, I mean, he's convincing Jack to be a hero, so he convinces Jack to jump out the back of the truck. He didn't know that Lydia was back there driving behind them. He had no idea. Like, what was the end game, Tuck? So now, I mean, you're not impressed with the bad guys as far as their bad guying goes, but you gotta be somewhat impressed with his one evil lair that he has in the, it's that abandoned factory or whatever, you know, the big empty, you know, maybe it's a floor of an office space. Everything's empty except the back corner where everything is in white, all this, you know, fluffy stuff, big white dog laying on his desk. I mean, that's a choice.
Yeah.
So he does have some bad guy style, at least.
It's not as good as Dr. Evil's lair.
No, it's not quite the same. Boy, oh boy, there is one joke that I definitely would not have gotten as a child, and that's when the doctor lady and the guy with the fake hand get together, and there's one moment where they're in bed, and just before the scene ends, you see him attached like a vibrator attachment to his stump. She's like, I'm busy, right? I think that's actually the scene. I think that's who he's talking to in his white desk room, is he's talking to the doctor later. I'm busy tonight. And yeah, you see him come in with a vibrator hand right on. That's awesome.
I kind of like, what age were you when you watched this movie for the first time?
I would have probably been around 10, 11, 12, somewhere in that. Okay. Yeah. Yeah,
because I was gonna say on like face value, it seems like a kid's movie ish, like I was saying, but maybe it's not.
Yeah.
The more we talk about this movie, the more I'm just like, there are layers to it that I'm like, I don't know how to even conceptualize it anymore. Like I need somebody to tell me like where it fits.
Yeah. Well, see, with that particular joke, I did notice that, you know, they were very discreet about it. It's not like they held it up like they would have been a Naked Gun movie or something like that. It was, you know, you kind of saw it at the very bottom of the camera, and then it slips out of frame with a buzzing sound, and then the scene cuts to the next thing, right? Like it was, okay. Yeah, it was a very subtle joke.
It's like one for the parents type joke.
Yeah, that's Shrek throwing in something for the adults. Yeah, it's not as in your face as Meg Ryan faking an orgasm in a New York diner, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've got the introduction of the cowboy where for some reason Jack has to, like, Meg Ryan or Lydia still has to follow this cowboy story, or is that to help Tuck? Like, I don't quite understand at this point whether Jack is following her just because Tuck needs her help, and so, well, I guess I gotta go where she's going. Or is this story that she's trying to break actually supposed to be helping Tuck? Because technically it kinda does.
I'm not sure I fully understood what was happening with Lydia and the and her story. I think like, yeah, I don't know. I was
It
kind of
just so
lost on that
happens
part.
that
Like it's just like
they're
they just happened to like why I don't understand why it wasn't enough to just like get Lydia involved because like that's the only person he can see can like the
that he
Tuckens can
can
trust.
trust. Everyone else is like, ah, just let him die, just let him be a skeleton in the sky forever. But yeah, it just seems like it's one of these, it's just happenstance that both of their goals are lining up.
They need to give her some sort of purpose.
That's true. Other than just being the girl that tags along. I do like the idea, though, that this guy can give me superpowers. I mean, super hearing to overhear the guys talking about his fate.
Yeah, they're like
He gets some.
Firestorm.
He's getting his. He's getting his adrenal gland stimulated to bring out the rage monster in him. A little Hulk going on. I know. It's like, can't you get in there and start zapping my muscles a little bit and build some muscle tone from the inside, strengthen me up a bit.
I mean, I'm sure, yeah. You would think like he could just go and like release hormones. Get things going.
Ha, now you have a boner.
I didn't say that, yeah. It's just like permanent Viagra on demand. Can
That's what you get for making me look at your dick.
it's like they just have a code word that's like, all right, well, time to tuck in.
Go gadget penis. Because and then of course the final superpower is the one where he like can actually change what he looks like. All of a sudden we can change faces. Where did she get a gold tooth from? Did she yank that out of the other guy's face? I mean, because it's just a cap, it doesn't stay on properly. What did she give him? I don't know. I just don't think it's the cowboy's actual tooth. Man, the
Yeah.
cowboy just he lives life to the fullest. What a scumbag.
It's like the Dos Equis guy,
Yeah.
the world's most interesting man.
That's right. He sure does. He puts out cigars on his hand. Because he loves a cigar. Makes love with it. He has two rules. One is that he makes love with his boots on. And then the second one, he whispers. I want to know what he says. I want to know what he says. I want to know what number two is. Because the look on her face. Oh boy. But yeah, so when he poses as the cowboy. This is the moment where, they end up getting found out because he can't handle the stress and transforms back. His tooth falls out. They don't trust him. They think everything is fishy. His hair's not right. I don't know. There's all sorts of things going wrong. But this is where Jack wants a moment alone with Lydia, and so he disconnects everything. I don't understand why it's kind of like, okay, so how you doing? Like, where'd this guy come from? It's just, well, okay,
Especially when you know that that's like Tuck's girl, like I don't know,
So
bro code.
we're stuck in captivity. Yeah, I'm just gonna hang out here, and now I'm
We
horny. Like, I
don't know if we're gonna make it out of this alive, so
yeah.
might as well just don't want to presumably die a virgin, I suppose.
Yeah.
Maybe it's one of those scenarios.
I mean, I definitely have geography questions because Tuck is able to make it through this body pretty fast. Now I know, the human body can pump, your entire circulatory system in like 30 seconds or something like that, or maybe it's even faster, right? So once he gets into the bloodstream, he really can move around fast, but it's like he goes from like the eye to the ear really easily, but he was started in the ass. Like he can travel through there at pretty extreme speeds, but then all of a sudden he's in the saliva. Like, why was he hanging out in the mouth? Like
Yeah, it's kind of I was thinking about this because he makes a really big point about like how he can't go through the heart. And I don't know that if you can travel like
It would be fatty, wouldn't it? Or like it would be too dense. Like you'd have to use the tubes.
you'd need to be going through arteries, but it's like though everything gets pumped through the heart. So I don't know how you would travel like I don't know how you would travel up and down without like making your way
Through the heart,
through
yeah.
the heart, because it's like a circulatory system, so you're either going like all the way back or like you'd have to go through.
But
I don't know.
he keeps cutting himself out of veins. But
All
if
right.
you cut yourself out of veins, like I know we're mostly water. Is there water surrounding the veins before you get to the muscle and all that sort of stuff? Or like that's why I say, otherwise aren't you just trying to plow your way through fat or meat? Like
Well, it'd be like you'd go vein, then I think muscle, because yeah, veins, it brings oxygen to the muscle, and then around the muscle would be the fat.
Yeah.
But I feel like to get into the spit, you'd have to go through the lungs.
Yeah.
Like you'd have to, and to like be able to go through a kiss, like you'd have to get, it's not even like getting into the spit, you'd have to like get into the mouth, which means you'd have to get into the lungs and go up like the airway or like the esophagus or something like
Well,
that.
yeah, and at the end, he does get into Jack's lungs, and that's why Jack has to sneeze. That's why our foreshadowing with the hairspray has to come back. Hairspray makes him sneeze. This is Moose.
Yeah. It's also interesting that you would that they make a big point about not going into the heart, but like you're okay to just like rip through the lungs.
Yeah,
Like I don't know.
no problem. Yeah. Seems like it
They'll
would
just
be
get a little
windy.
pneumonia, I suppose.
I mean, I like the moment of the doctor shining the whatever it's called, lightoscope in his eye. I'm blind. But yeah, I mean, it's just as a 10-year-old, 11-year-old, 12-year-old watching this movie, in that moment with the kiss, it's like how much spit goes back and forth between kisses? That's crazy. You know,
Yeah.
like I know he's microscopic and everything, but boy, oh boy, that's yeah, that just seemed like an awful gush. But yeah, I again, the geography questions. I don't understand why he was near that mouth in the first place. I don't remember him having business in the mouth before that moment. But yeah, because he ends up in Lydia, somehow through searching around, like they kiss, but somehow he doesn't end up in Lydia's stomach. He ends up in her womb. He's all up in her uterus. Like, again, it's just. He's just cutting his way through people's bodies to find his way to inside her uterus and finds out that she's pregnant. But
Would have made more sense if Jack and Lydia had sex and then he could have went in the semen,
yeah.
then the uterus would have been right there. So
Oh boy. Yeah. I don't know if I'd want to go on that journey. I mean, that would be and I don't mean like even li literally that one. I don't know how I've whether I'd want to be shrunken and go inside a body. That there are some moments that are absolutely terrifying, like when he's dangling over the stomach with the bad guy inside him. You know, where it's just like that's peril. That's scary. I don't want to be near that heart.
Yeah, I don't think like driving. I remember even thinking of this back in like magic school bus days. I don't think that like driving through the human body would be on the top of my list of things to do.
Yeah, there's some disgusting shit in there. It's not good. I mean, and at least they didn't go there. I mean, they literally could have gone with, you know, some bowel humor if they had wanted to. Oh.
That should have been how they got him out at the end, instead of the sneeze. It was like just like stimulated the colon. Like, oh, I gotta
Why not?
go.
Yeah. That's how they could have done it. They could have been just like feeding him prune juice and, you know, like
Like,
just.
he's too far down. There's only one way out.
Well, there's two, but we already mentioned the other one. So, but no, so we end up getting the bad guys, though. Yeah, the one bad guy with the hand or the lack of hand, he gets shrunk down and he gets ended up digested by Jack. And meanwhile, the other bad guys have been shrunk down to 50%. And are now attacking them in the car. They did this with forced perspective. That's why it looks a little off.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they went elf style on it, though. They tried the forced perspective thing. But, yeah, those hands don't quite line up with... The arms are too long for...
They did their best.
They tried. They tried, yeah.
The budget was really low at that point.
Yeah. So they finally kind of get everything ended back to the lab. They get the chip back. They get Jack there, and he sneezes all over the guy's glasses. I like the moment of him about to wipe away his glasses. No. But boy, oh boy, like those are the cleanest looking drops of sneeze ever on glasses. I mean, that is so obviously just a spray bottle, spritz bottle. Yeah. But, yeah, they put in the chip, and the question is, eat me or drink me. Did you remember the answer to that? Like, did that actually have you going, wait, okay, drink me, eat me?
It's eat.
It is eat me.
I feel like, yeah, it's eat the girl.
It is eat me. But, yeah. But I like the moment of hesitation, though, where, like, nothing happens, and then one guy goes, maybe it was drink me. It's just a great moment, yeah. That was my second favorite line in the movie. You digested the bad guy was a good one too. So yeah, and then they end up meeting and in real life because Tuck gets real enlarged, and then like you said, the weird epilogue to the movie, that was it necessary? Who knows? But Tuck and Lydia get married. He's got the cufflinks that are made out of the chips from the miniaturizing thing. Bad guys are still after it. Hijack the limo.
Yeah. Marvel missed an opportunity to like cast Dennis Quaid as Hank Pym was kind of my takeaway of this movie.
Yeah.
It just would have been such a like, it would just have been like such a fitting, like, I don't know what you call it, like a little tip of the hat to this movie.
Yeah, but it would be, that's true, but I mean in this movie, like, he's not the nerd. All the nerds are doing parkour. He's the, you know, the disgraced Air Force pilot that's the only one crazy enough to do it. That he fills out all the requirements. He's the only one crazy enough to do it.
He's a poor man's Maverick. Instead of going to Mach 10, he's just flying around inside of human bodies.
Yeah, his code name's like Micro Machine.
Yeah, Micro Machine. Yeah. Selfie Boy.
Yeah, and so then we get to watch the credits as Jack chases after Tuck and Lydia because now he's a hero. I mean, you know, like, Jack could have gotten laid. The Safeway girl was, like, practically just throwing herself at him. But he's like, no way. It's like, dude, you're still hoping that Lydia's going to give it up to you. You're going to rescue them and then she'll fall in love with you. That's a terrifying prospect, that this man has just suddenly become so obsessed with this woman that he's like, no, I'm going to chase after them, save them. She'll fall in love with me. She's going to leave that Tuck son of a bitch. Yeah. And there we go. That is Inner Space. Now, Colin, on IMDb, it's scored 6.8 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 66. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 82% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 65%. Everything around mid-60s except for that one wild critic rating on tomato. It's fresh according to the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like your face transforming into the cowboy, hit us with some reviews.
I would have liked like an alternate version of this movie where in the end it went a little more Twilight Zone and like Jack just usurped Tuck's position in life and just married Lydia and raised Tuck's baby as his own. I think I would have liked that ending better than what we got in the end. But that's just me.
The sequel tease wasn't needed for you.
No, it was mostly because it was like a bizarre sequel tease. Like, I don't know. It just felt so weird.
Yeah.
All right, I got some long ones today. Max K gives the movie 1 out of 5 stars and says, "If you Google search generic carbon stamped 80s movie, this is the exact film you would get. This film is made up of pretty much nothing original. Its characters and humor have all been done in about 30 different movies in the same era. The positive reviews here are quite misleading, and the bulk of them you'll find present here are not for the writing, but for the nostalgia of the 80s. The movie is 2 hours long, and you will feel every minute of it. Its villain characters are moronically stupid, and it suffers from some serious tonal whiplash and really drawn-out plot. There's only about 3 minutes of this movie that I'd actually like to watch for some of the effects and sound design, but the film as a whole? Forget it. Everything in this movie has been done before somewhere better, and if you're looking to satisfy that 80s craving, I'd recommend watching one of the films this movie ripped off instead. This is one that you can definitely skip and find something better. There is nothing here that this movie has to offer over any other sci-fi film in the 80s or any sci-fi film period for that matter. It doesn't at all surprise me that this was a flop at the box office."
Yeah, that one definitely brings up some points where it says that it's kind of generic. Last week, you were a little bit concerned that it was going to be weird, like Buckaroo Banzai. So, your impression of the poster is was it at least not weird? When I assured you
No,
that I don't
yeah.
think it's weird, like, and
No, yeah.
that guy straight up just says, "No, this is vanilla as fuck."
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. It's not like out there like bizarre like Buckaroo Banzai, that's for sure.
Yeah.
David L says 3.5 out of 5 stars. Inner Space is quite literally the epitome of everything that 80s blockbuster represented for better and for worse. They crammed so many elements and genres into a 2-hour movie that they risked it falling apart. You've got the central SF storyline, which led to a lot of adventurous, fun moments inside the human body. You've got the Meg Ryan, Dennis Quaid romance, which is quite sweet. But you've also got the comedy, which is not so good as the humor here is very juvenile. The film is quite well put together in terms of VFX and especially a great Jerry Goldsmith score, but it was still frenetic in pacing and highly chaotic throughout.
Okay, yeah.
Andres S says 4 out of 5 stars. That opening shot of the microscopic image of ice was super trippy, an absolutely ridiculous and outlandish premise. I have to praise the practical effects. The way they made parts of the inside of the body look was believable. Martin Short's performance was hilarious. This movie was a hoot, a holler, and a goof and a gaff. Silly but funny. That reveal when he finds out he's inside Lydia was awesome. That fetus scene was actually incredible. The dwarf scenes were so funny. This ended up being a pretty interesting and unique sci-fi comedy movie. What really surprised me was how well done all the practical effects were. All the scenes involving the inside of the body were impressive. I feel like he said that already. I like the character development of Jack. He started out as a worried hypochondriac and ended up as a strong, respectable man with the help of the little guy inside him. Dennis Quaid was enthusiastic and charming to watch. I thought it was a fun and entertaining movie. I'd watch it again for sure, and I'd like to own it.
What happened in that one is the guy wanted to move that sentence, so he copied it and pasted it somewhere else and then forgot to delete the
Forgot to
original
delete
one.
it, yeah.
And I did not give I did not push my agenda of the good special effects enough. I mean, I mentioned it. You're kind of like, yeah, they were pretty good. That guy brought them up again. So I agree with him. I think the special effects are pretty good. I think, especially when you consider 1987.
Yeah.
But I think they did a good job of making believable special effects that even in 2024 mostly still hold up. I'm impressed with it. I wanted to piggyback on that guy's comment there.
Yeah. This last one is an unnamed reviewer, 3 out of 5 stars. Having seen this a long time ago, I completely forgot that it existed. So re-finding it on a 10-cent VHS tape not in a surprising way, but
Wow.
more of an oh yeah, this exists kind of way, had me wanting to watch it again. Although through my weird memory, I somehow forgot Martin Short was in this. Inner Space is about a ride at Disney World. I mean, a redo of Fantastic Voyage. Wait, nope, it's both. Dennis Quaid is a drunken fighter pilot who gets injected into Martin Short's spastic everyman body. Short must find a way to get Quaid and his little machine out of his insides before an evil group of evil scientists take him out permanently. It's fun and goofy and way too long for this premise. Side plots with the buyer of stolen goods, the cowboy, seem like filler, and although Quaid and Short have great chemistry, which lasts for the whole film, Short's spastic routine isn't really my cup of tea in this film. The Quaid-Meg Ryan relationship was fine, but also seemed like it was added in just to pad out parts of the film. As I said, while entertaining, Inner Space adds up to a lot of running around, chase scenes, and Short dancing like his bones are breaking at the same time. I still found it to be mostly entertaining, though, and I would recommend it if you haven't seen it. But the overall length and the side plots just kept it from being great.
Okay. Yeah. Right on. So yeah, mid-60s, except for the critics on Rotten Tomatoes. This is one that I'm having trouble removing the nostalgia from it. I don't know why. I don't know why I'm going to cling on to this one and just say that, I still thoroughly enjoyed myself. I don't know whether it's just all the memories coming back or whether because I knew what I was in for, I knew what energy to take into it. Like you said, maybe if you rewatched it and kind of thought a little bit sillier about it, then maybe you'd enjoy it in a different way, But yeah. Oh, that last review also mentioned the Fantastic Voyage. I guess the doctor that is in this, or the guy that plays the doctor in this one, was also a doctor in Fantastic Voyage. So that's why he got cast in that role, I guess. I just that was something I remember reading in there. Yeah, this is one that I just like Batteries Not Included. I will defend this one to the death. I still like Inner Space. I can't believe it's been so long since I've seen it, but it just for me, I still had a good time with it. Yeah, it's not perfect. Yeah, it's a cookie cutter, some sort of adventure movie. I don't know, but I still had fun with it. So that's my thought on Inner Space. Colin, your first viewing. You now know this movie exists. What did you think?
I think I'd agree with the last reviewer probably the most. I think I don't hate the movie by any stretch. I think it's decent. I just think there are too many things happening and it seemed very drawn out.
Yeah.
Like from the point that I wish they would have taken more time to just like have the Jack Tuck like oh, you're in my body type relationship. Well, and like learn more about Jack and like his life and that kind of stuff. But it goes like almost immediately into the like overarching like oh, these people are trying to get like the mad sign. Like it goes like almost immediate to the spy thing.
And you immediately put a ticking clock on it too. This guy has 24 hours of air. He can put a flask out to get some alcohol inside his cabin, but he can't somehow refill his oxygen tanks using this guy's lungs.
I think it would have been better if instead of having the like dual like shrinking chip thing, if it was more a case of like say Jack got like injected or Tuck got injected to Jack and then Jack like lives like way out of town or like in another, so he's like traveling and now it's like they have to make their way back to the lab to get him out, and in that time they're like being intercepted by the evil guys and they have to like get out of the way. But you still get to like learn more about like you don't really get to learn anything about Tuck or Jack
Well,
throughout the movie.
and with what you just said, it's set up in the beginning that Jack needs a vacation. Like he goes to cook travel. He is trying to plan something, but he never gets to go because he gets caught up in this. But it would be better get him on a plane, and then it's like, oh, now we have to chase him across the country. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, like I think it, I would have just I wanted more of like a buddy, not buddy cop, but just like a buddy buddy movie, like a, you know, like a Rock, Kevin Hart, Jackie Chan, Chris Tucker, like I wanted like a buddies movie. I actually think even though like we've set up this month to honor our patron saint, Meg Ryan, that like she's pretty forgettable in this movie, and like her character
Unfortunately,
and her character is like so unnecessary. Like I agree with that. Like you could have just cut the romance out of this completely, or to go back to like typical 80s tropes, have her like appear at the beginning, and then Dennis Quaid goes back to her in the end. He's a changed man, and we assume they live happily ever after. Like we didn't need everything with her in the middle. Like it just kind of, I don't know. I do think that the story is like very bloated. It could have been like a little bit more streamlined, and just
Well,
it
and
did. This movie didn't need to be 2 hours, I think is my main takeaway. It was just like kind of too long for what it was.
And like even a better way to do the love story part of it is to do more of a Cyrano de Bergerac type situation where Tuck is trying to win Lydia back through Jack. I mean, the fact that you've made Jack interested in Lydia, that's your downfall. As soon as you introduce this love triangle, which really is not a fair love triangle. It's the scales are heavily favored in one direction on that one. But yeah, it could have been a chance of Tuck to try to win her back through the use of Jack instead of doing what they did with it instead.
Yeah, I think if you wanted to make this movie a romantic comedy, there's another way of doing it where instead of like, really you have to take away the time limit and have it be like over a longer period of time where everybody thinks that like Jack is, or that's not the names, where everybody thinks Tuck is dead, and then he's just like speaking to Jack and being like, no, I'm not dead, like we need to figure this out, like and then have like Tuck come to grips with like the fact that he's seemingly a shitty human being, and like almost like a counter, like It's a Wonderful Life, where instead of seeing like how great the world would be, or how bad the world would be without him, you see like Scrooge style, like nobody misses you, like everybody's better off without you, and like.
Yeah, everyone thinks you're a piece of shit. You crash that you got beat up at that special event because you were a piece of shit. I don't know. Yeah, that could be fun.
But yeah, on the whole, it's a fun movie. It's not terrible, but I think I'd probably side at that critic score is like insane to me. I think this is like firmly a high, like a 60% movie.
I mean, really, ultimately, the thing that we learned most watching this movie and watching other Joe Dante movies is that Joe Dante is just kind of shitty at directing love stories. I mean, we saw it in Small Soldiers with Kirsten Dunst. We saw it in what else? Gremlins, the Phoebe Cates, that weird relationship. We saw it in Explorers with the weird stalker guy. So
There
all
you
I'm
go.
saying is we've just learned that we can't go to Joe Dante for a love story. But everything else, I think, is not too bad. I kind of like everything else. Well, there we go! That is Inner Space, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy. If you like that show, one thing you could do to really help us out, well, just tell people. Share our posts. Word of mouth is so important for a podcast trying to find an audience. Or go over to whatever app you listen to your podcasts on. Give us some stars. Give us as many stars as you can. It just helped drive us up some charts, help us get noticed. Or if you want to be a producer of the show and donate to us, you can go to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become part of our Patreon family, and you're an executive producer, so you get a shout out just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
Check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages, and drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like. and then maybe you'll find us talking about it on the show.
Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Colin, it's been a fabulous Maguary. We may not have brought it out as strong as we could have, but it was a fun one to visit. I like Inner Space. So you're taking off on us for a couple months, though. You're off doing a play.
I
think you should give me a soundbite that I can drop into every episode until you're back advertising your show. What are you off doing, Colin?
All right. If you're in the Edmonton area from April 17th to the 27th, you can find me performing at the Walterdale Theater in the production of The Swearing Jar. I play Owen. Let's see. I always struggle to like tell people how to like what plays are about without giving too much away. Basically, the story follows a girl named Carrie who's throwing a birthday party for her husband, Simon. And the play kind of waffles back and forth between the concert where Carrie and Owen are performing, and then it flashes back to scenes from Carrie and Simon's relationship, as well as how Carrie and Owen met. So it's been a lot of fun picking up some new skills, learning how to play the guitar. So would love it if you came out and watched it. And if you do, I hope you enjoy it. Drop me a line and let me know what you thought.
Right on. Yeah, so while you're gone, Aaron will be back filling in for you. And we've got March Madness month coming up. Nothing to do with basketball. Just trying to get some clicks. Trying to get hashtag March Madness. We're going to trick some people.
I mean, you're not watching White Man Can't Jump and Like Mike
No,
Face
we're
Jam
watching,
2?
No, we're watching movies where people are going mad.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so first up with Aaron next week, I get to watch Memento. So I'm excited about that.
That's a good one.
That's a good movie.
It's like a heavy movie for this show, I feel like. I don't know that we've watched like a real dramatic movie.
Yeah, no, it definitely is quite a departure from what we're used to.
Yes.
But there we go. So until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
And I'll see you in a couple months. I'm Colin Stewart.
And I'll see you with Aaron Knowles next week on I Used to Like This One.
In San Francisco, no, damn it, I already messed up on the S's.